You need to have people in government who've actually been there and done it. Because if you haven't, then where do you begin? And so I'd like to see a lot more collaboration between government and private sector in terms of getting, you know, a lot more knowledge, frontline knowledge, into some of the things that you absolutely must do to secure this technology, rather than simply deciding that that's the way we're going to go and then leaving it up to the different departments to figure things out.
You're listening to the ISF podcast for your organization's better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. This episode was recorded in November 2024, following the U.S. presidential election. Journalist Nick Witchell speaks with Steve about what the coming Trump administration will mean for global business. They consider potential changes to the U.S. approach to tech regulation and foreign policy.
Steve, welcome once again to the Cyber Hot Seat. I think we should start with the outcome of the U.S. presidential election. Mm-hmm. What do we know about Donald Trump's attitude to cyber defense, to cyber matters generally?
Gosh, that's a big one, Nick. I think, well, we do have the good fortune, I suppose, of being able to look back at the last time that he was president and see some of the things he did then. So I think what we can expect to see is him really just picking up from where he left off in terms of some of the attention that he's going to be paying, I think, to cyber defense of the United States primarily. I think that a lot of what we've seen from President-elect Trump is that he is focused fairly and squarely on the United States. So how he then decides to collaborate more outside of the United States with, say, the Europeans, for instance, remains to be seen, because, of course, we've had a lot of change in the political markets outside of the United States.
It doesn't sound as though this figured very much in his literature, in what he said, I shouldn't imagine, at all in the campaign.
No.
Do you think he has a policy, a distinguishable policy? Do you think that he wants to take it more seriously, to take action in a more organized fashion?
I think he does. I think there are two things I'd say about it. I think the reason that we perhaps haven't seen a great deal of it, and let's be fair, we didn't see much of it either in the UK elections, is that cybersecurity is not a vote winner. It doesn't really appeal to people. So therefore, you're not going to make a lot of noise about it in a manifesto or on the hustings and so on. Secondly, though, back to the United States and Donald Trump in particular, if we look at some of the initiatives that he has in place around, for instance, immigration, then cybersecurity is fairly core and central to some of these programs and plans, because anything that involves technology, of course, also involves cybersecurity. So I think that that's the way we're going to start seeing cyber coming into his perspective on the world. Where it touches some of his other frontline policies, then we're going to see it playing a role.
What would you like to be seeing and hearing, ideally, from an incoming US administration?
I think there are a number of things where I would say, you know, respectfully, that the US is lagging behind. I would really like to see some consistency in terms of regulation across the various states. And I say that from a pure business perspective. Because one of the things that businesses do need to have is very clear guardrails. You know, we can operate within those. And I think the United States has a sort of patchwork quilt of regulation, depending on which state you happen to be in. That makes life quite difficult from a business perspective. So I would like to see some of that, more sort of federal control, if you like, over some of the regulation. I'd also like to see a little bit more focus on protecting critical national infrastructure. That's hugely important. And I'm not sure that during the last regime, if you like, that that was given the sort of attention that it might have warranted.
And it might be reasonable to hope that this would be, within the very polarized United States that we find ourselves with, that this would be an issue about which or around which there would be bipartisan approach.
You would hope. I think that Donald Trump does have the advantage, of course, that Congress have gone the same way. So he's in a very, very different position from, say, President Biden. He does have the ability to push through a number of different schemes, programs, policies that the former president, or the current president, wasn't able to because of this sort of mishmash in terms of who controls the different houses. So I would like as well to see him using that wisely to push through some of the policies around cyber in particular that are going to address areas of concern, critical national infrastructure, defence, obviously, from his perspective as well.
And do you think that there is any prospect of the United States taking a more clearly defined international role, a leadership role internationally?
I think that job number one is the United States. And so where an international initiative can support that, I think we'll see it. I think if we look at some of the things that are going on, you know, geopolitically around the world, Donald Trump's coming into the presidency at a time when the world is actually crying out for some things to be resolved. You know, the war in the Ukraine has been dragging on for a very long time. The Middle East has been dragging on, some would say, for far too long. We've got a whole range of different things that are going on with China, for instance. So I think there is an opportunity to really set a tone, a level, call it what you will, but to take much more of a leadership role in some of these things. Whether or not he chooses to do that, we'll have to wait and see, because as I say, his first concern, his first focus area is going to be the United States.
But when it comes to any possibility of any enhanced regulations affecting social media companies, that surely is hugely compromised and complicated by the fact that all the major social media companies are American, and they would resist fiercely any attempt at greater regulation. Would that not be the case?
I think they would, and I think we're seeing that in terms of some of the sort of, you know, bar fights that are breaking out between the European Union and some of the social media companies. And I think that they view the United States as being their primary domain, and they should be able to operate quite freely there. I think, again, if you look back at the sort of Republican perspective on some of this, then it is all about how do you enable American business to flourish within the American shores. And I think that we're probably going to see a little bit more friction between the United States and the European Union in those regards, because the European Union, of course, has a very, very different view on the way in which some of these social media companies ought to be operating.
And one would expect that Donald Trump, pals with Elon Musk, would rather take the side of the free marketeers, I would have thought.
I think traditionally, he has always veered that way, hasn't he? I think that's his natural go-to. But one of the things as well that I think we've all learned about Donald Trump is not to try to anticipate what it is that he's going to do and how he's going to react.
We're familiar with the reports of attempted interference in the democratic process in the United States by malign state actors.
Right.
What do you think this has told us about the scale and the severity of the threat to our democracies?
I think it's a little bit allied to the question before, Nick, around social media, because I can't really distinguish between the two things. If we look at what goes on within the election, when people talk about electoral interference, very often they sort of imagine that it's about people, you know, hacking into systems and changing the votes and that kind of thing. And of course, we shouldn't be complacent about that. But it's very much more about the misinformation that is spread that tries then to influence voter patterns and voter behaviours. And I think we've seen quite a lot of that. And that typically tends to come through the social media channels. So we're back to what is the role of social media in a democracy in terms of not managing, but just being responsible about the way in which they monitor the material that is put onto their sites. And we shouldn't underestimate the size of that challenge, of course.
So two quite distinct issues there, really. The internal issue of misinformation coming to voters via social media channels about which something could be done if there was the will, and the external threat about which, candidly, probably very little can be done, particularly at a time of such sort of international tension.
Yes, I think that, you know, the sad message is it's something we're going to have to live with, and we're probably all going to have to build our own filters to really distinguish between what is reality or what we trust and what we don't.
We also, of course, have a relatively new government in the United Kingdom. What have you gleaned? What can you say about the attitude of Keir Starmer and his Labour government towards cyber and the need for greater regulation?
Well, I think the UK government is, in fairness, making some very positive moves in that space. So we are seeing, you know, the increase of some legislation. There is obviously the focus, the interest in trying to protect some of our social media channels, however far you can do that within the confines of the UK, given all of the other things we've been talking about in terms of who owns the social media organisations. But for me, the one thing that I still haven't seen in the UK is a willingness, a readiness, I suppose, to really try to understand some of the true implications of a lack of cybersecurity. So we hear a lot, for instance, about investment in technology as a means to fix some of the challenges, for instance, in the health service. Yet, as soon as you implement technology without security, you're creating a huge problem for yourself further down the road, and one which, unless you have invested ahead of time, is going to cost you a horrible amount of money to try to fix later. And so I would very much like to see much more focus on how we can implement secure technology rather than assuming that technology can solve some of the problems that we're facing.
And you seem to be saying that even after all of these years, after all of the efforts that have gone into this, there is still a significant and worrying absence of that understanding within government of whichever colour.
I think there is. And I think the key to it, to be perfectly frank, is you need to have people in government who've actually been there and done it. Because if you haven't, then where do you begin? And so I'd like to see a lot more collaboration between government and private sector in terms of getting, you know, a lot more knowledge, frontline knowledge, into some of the things that you absolutely must do to secure this technology rather than simply deciding that that's the way we're going to go and then leaving it up to the different departments to figure things out. So a lot more of a strategic approach to securing the technology that we're all as taxpayers going to be paying for to solve some of the problems that exist.
And in identifying and bringing about that more strategic approach, do you foresee or visualise a greater role for the ISF in advising and canvassing of government, you know, an incoming government which wants to be given advice, told what would be a sensible way of approaching this?
Well, we do work with a number of government departments, obviously, who use our tools, our research, and take up some of our advice and guidance. I think that there is clearly a role for us to play if government were so interested, because we do represent a large number of very, very large organisations. We do have access into a wealth of understanding and knowledge from the business perspective. Now, I'm not saying that we're going to replace some of the more technical aspects that government has well under control, but certainly from the business perspective, in terms of how these things are used, some of the real day challenges that are out there, then I think there's an opportunity for us to make a contribution if we were to be encouraged to do so.
And let's hope they listen. Steve Durbin, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Nick.
Special thanks to journalist Nick Witchell. We'll be back with the second part of this conversation next week. In the meantime, if you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast, and we'd be pleased if you'd consider sharing the episode. To become a member, get in touch with Steve directly at steve.durbin@securityforum.org or on LinkedIn. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org. Don't miss our other podcast, Dear InfoSec, sharing conversations with members about the real-world applications of ISF research. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox Productions and Tavia Gilbert. Thanks for listening.